This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Downtown Houston. This year, the organization honors Dream Keepers of Houston. You can nominate a Dream Keeper for recognition this year. Learn about the Black Heritage Society or get more information by logging on to their website at originalmlkparade.org or by calling 713-236-1700. This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Lavinka.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn.
Oops, and Glenn Holt. Tell you what, after that last show, we really got something to follow. We do have a show tonight, though, and so coming up first, we're going to be discussing the year in review with guest John Wright, who I guess is trying to call in at the moment, of the Dallas Voice. And then we have News Wrap from This Way Out. And so what they're going to look at is while lesbian and gay couples wed outside the New Hampshire State House soon after January 1st, they became the fifth state with marriage equality, and also celebrated UK rugby legend Garth Thomas tells the world that he's a gay man. So that's interesting. And then followed by that, the quarterly GLBT leadership meeting will be this Saturday at the Houston GLBT Community Center, and we will have Tim Brookover on to talk about that. At the top of our second hour at 10 o'clock, Bunnies on the Bayou. It started as a small party among friends on Easter Sunday, and of course it was called something else at the time, in 1979. And what began as a small event has grown into something very large. It's actually Houston's largest outdoor cocktail party. It's a 501c3 community fundraiser, and now Bunnies on the Bayou is producing a winter event. And Brian is going to talk to Vince Flickinger, president, and Jack Berger, director, about Snow Bunnies 2010. Snow Bunnies is also a term they use for Canadians who come down to Florida during the wintertime. But anyway, Bayou City Boys Club at 1022 this evening. Another nonprofit 501c3 organization, best known for producing its Jungle Party the Saturday before Easter. And they've raised over $1 million over the years. Well, in 2010, the Bayou City's Boys Club is gearing up for its 18th Jungle Party with, of course, now I'm dyslexic, so I read this as an underwear kickoff party, but it does say underwriter kickoff party. Mm-hmm. To be held Sunday, January 17th. Well, you know where my mind is at. A guest will be Billy Underwood, president. And then, of course, we have our feature segments from This Way Out. And for, yes, ladies and gentlemen, the very first time in history, our very own Jack Valinsky with the interview last week from Anise Parker made it onto international syndication on This Way Out. And so that's going to be actually part of This Way Out's feature segments. And then they'll have something else as well, but that'll be so anticlimactic that we won't even talk about it, will we? Oh, and it's going to freeze, by the way. It's going to freeze tonight. And if you think that tonight is very cold, just wait until... Did you see the movie The Day After Tomorrow?
Is that what it's going to be?
It's going to be like that, you know, where all the windows shatter in the Empire State Building and all that. That's
summer in Canada,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, pretty
Hell's
much.
Hell's freezing over, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what John Stewart said.
That's right. Hell's freezing over.
We have somebody waiting on...
Well, just before we go to John, of course, the news today was that Anise took her oath publicly, and the rest of the city council and the controller were sworn in today for a new two-year term. And, you know, I've known Anise for a long time, but she just seems to be getting better. Her speech today was just incredible. And besides talking about all the wonderful issues that she's going to be working on very hard, along with the city council and the citizens of Houston, what she said about our community was just incredible. Near the end of her speech, she says, "Houstonians were not very surprised that they elected the first gay mayor of an American city." She told a packed theater, standing on stage with former mayors and newly elected city council members, she talked about how that this is a dream for a lot of people to be able to go from where we have been by being discriminated against, of course I'm paraphrasing this, to be able to have one of our own being elected to the fourth largest city in the country, and that she will not be holding the torch forever, and she'll be happy to give over the torch to somebody else when the time comes. But the fact that we were not forgotten in that speech.
Absolutely. I came to tears when she was listing the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and when she said transgender, tears came to my eyes.
Absolutely.
The trans community has been left out so many times, and it was just wonderful to hear it on stage from the mayor of the fourth largest city in the United States. What can I say?
I think we should say something about the protesters and how our community responded. And
yes, three of them?
The three protesters that came
from Kansas.
All the way down from Kansas, spewing their hate, but we had 40 anti-protesters.
And what organization was that?
It's called Equality Houston, I think. And the Quality March Houston, and they're kind of a continuation of the Quality March, and they were holding signs that says God hates shrimp and God hates mixed fabrics, and you know, all these quotes from Leviticus that are used against us. So kudos to them. Daniel Williams did a good job, and you're on TV today.
And the reality is most people who entered the theater came in from underneath through the garage, so they didn't see that.
Well, I guess the Westboro Baptist Church doesn't know about the underground tunnel.
No, not in downtown Houston. That
they don't know about the underground.
The fact that most people are never on the streets in Houston. Yeah. They're always either in the buildings or underneath. I am incredibly proud. I've known Anise for a long time. She certainly worked very hard for this. The community worked very hard to get her elected. There's a number of issues that we need to deal with as an Indy city, but I think Houston is poised to do a great job. I'm very hopeful for the new city council that they'll all be working together, and we will see. We will see. Well, and on the line with us now is John Wright from the Dallas Voice, and can you top that?
Hi, Jack. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Hi. Thanks for having me. It's a real honor.
Well, we had a lot of things happening this year in Texas, and the Dallas Voice is really the only major newspaper left in the state, the GLBT newspaper. And so let's talk about some of the things that happened this year.
Well, yeah, a lot did happen this year. And obviously one of the biggest things for you all is what just happened recently. And I want to take an opportunity to congratulate not only Anise, but the entire Houston LGBT community for her election. And I know it's a little bit late, but this is the first chance I've gotten. So congratulations, everybody. That is just a huge deal. Huge, huge. Even from our perspective up here in Dallas, despite the alleged rivalry, I mean, it couldn't get really any bigger than that. Certainly for you guys. Up our way, obviously, our biggest story of the year was the Rainbow Lounge incident in Fort Worth. And so that was number one on our list of the year's top stories in our most recent issue. It really has, in a lot of ways, transformed the city of Fort Worth and the LGBT community in Fort Worth and beyond. Extending to the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, which of course has jurisdiction over the whole state, and undoubtedly many other places. So that was number one.
Well, let's give a little background to that story.
Well, on the night of June 28th, which was, of course, the 40th anniversary of the Stonewall Riot, Fort Worth police, along with agents from the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, went into the Rainbow Lounge, a newly opened gay bar in Fort Worth, and basically started busting heads and taking names. And that's literally what they did, I think, is they went in there, loaded for bear, and did what was routine maybe 25, 30 years ago in terms of law enforcement and gay bars. And, of course, in response to that, all hell broke loose. I mean, to do that on any night would have been bad enough, but to do it on the 40th anniversary of Stonewall, it just was completely unacceptable. And so the response to that has just been overwhelming from the LGBT community up here in every way you can possibly imagine. I mean, the pushback has just been tremendous. And, I can talk about some of the details of the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission firing three employees and Fort Worth, the city of Fort Worth agreeing to implement a number of citywide changes, the diversity training that's going to be going on, their consideration of domestic partner benefits, their addition of gender identity to their non-discrimination policy. It just goes on and on.
And that's really, really incredible. So, has it brought organizations together or just people in general up there in Fort Worth just said we had it?
I think both, but certainly the latter. I mean, it's just Fort Worth has actually, always been somewhat of a progressive city on GLBT issues. I think they were actually maybe the first to have a non-discrimination ordinance that included sexual orientation many years ago, but this just kind of took it to another level, and people, people fought back in a figurative sense, obviously. And yes, the organizations have banded together. Everybody, people from Dallas have, it's really bridged the gap between Dallas and Fort Worth.
And that's what I was going to ask you also. I mean, it seemed to me, and I don't live up there, but there seemed to be a real sort of not knowing what's going on in each other's cities.
Yeah, we're what, 40 miles apart? It's 30 miles apart, I guess, from the east border of Fort Worth to the west border of Dallas. And, 30 miles can seem like 300 miles sometimes. And then there's that rivalry. It's just like between Houston and Dallas. There's sort of that, a little bit of rivalry.
Sure.
Traditionally between the two big cities, in North Texas in this case. And, maybe there hasn't always been the type of collaboration that there needs to be. And truthfully, we as a newspaper may have been as guilty of that as anyone. Our focus, we are called the Dallas Voice.
Right.
Obviously, we're not going to change our name. But, it has really, for us, opened our eyes, from an editorial perspective that, there is a huge LGBT community in Fort Worth and in Tarrant County, and we need to cover it. We need to be the newspaper for certainly all of North Texas. We need to try to cover as much of Texas as we can in general. We need to do a better job of being conscious of the fact that Fort Worth is very much there from a gay standpoint.
And the city count, the elected officials in Fort Worth, were they basically embarrassed by this thing and said that we need to change this for our citizens, or did the community have to, say to the city council, you need to do something about this?
Yeah, well, again, I would say both. A group immediately formed in the wake of the raid, specifically formed for the very purpose of figuring out what to do, and that group is called Fairness Fort Worth, and it's still in existence, and it's going to remain in existence at least until all the recommendations have been implemented or dealt with, addressed. So there's that aspect of it, the community demanding it. But then also, undoubtedly the elected officials, the police department, the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, all were very much embarrassed by this incident. And nationally, it cast a national spotlight on what they did. And nobody wants that. The Fort Worth Police Department doesn't want to be looked at by somebody in New York as, a bunch of bigots. Despite what some people might say about police, they really, I think, are human. And they don't like it when that kind of bad PR gets out there. So a combination of the two.
Yeah, this is Jennifer Renee. I had one question. Now that the dust is all settled behind all of this and the investigation's done, do you think that somewhere in the background someone made a decision to do it that night because of its significance as the 40th anniversary?
I personally don't think so. There are some who still undoubtedly believe that, but there is no evidence, there is no hard evidence to show that they did at any point have any knowledge of that anniversary. So what we're talking about is probably mere coincidence. And, you know, it's almost one of those coincidences where you say, wow, you know, maybe there is something bigger going on here, if you know what I mean.
Well, I'm not
because what are the chances? You know, what are the chances that would happen?
Well, you know, and I don't believe in coincidences, and the fact is that were those individuals who were in charge of the raid, who had planned the raid, who selected the date, selected the location, been so oblivious to history and what was going on around them to miss that, oh yeah, by the way, this is June, this is Pride Month, this is going on, and especially when they're raiding a gay establishment.
Right. Well, it is Pride Month, and it's not really Pride Month. I mean, it's Pride Month nationally. It's not really Pride Month in Fort Worth, per se. Their parade and stuff is now in October. I really don't have a good answer to that. Why they didn't know? It's probably largely because we've just been completely marginalized over history. I mean, how could an event that big, you know, not make its way into the public, you know, sphere of general knowledge? But apparently, it hasn't. I mean, the LGBT community may be aware of it, and even some people in our community aren't aware of it. But I don't think we realize sometimes the lack of knowledge that's out there beyond our community. People just don't know what these dates are and what these events were. So, I really, honestly, my short answer is I do not believe that they knew beforehand.
Okay. Well, thanks. Let's move on to some of the other stories.
Okay, what else we got? Do you want me to go down our top 10 here?
Sure.
What do you want me to do? Where did I put my paper? I just had it out here because I didn't want to forget anything. Let's see. We had the Rainbow Lounge at number one. Where do we have at number two? At number two, we had, I should remember this. Sorry, guys. The Hate Crimes Act. Of course, it's federal. Number three, we had Obama's first year in office, the ups and downs associated with that. Let me know if you want me to go into any more detail on any of these.
Well, sure. And what is, you know, what was your writings about that, Obama's first year as president?
Well, certainly ups and downs, for sure. Obviously, it started off with his inauguration and his selection of televangelist Rick Warren to be the... Actually, I don't know if he does TV, but he's an evangelical Christian, Rick Warren from California, and many people in the LGBT community up in arms about that. From there, you know, there were, again, good things and bad things. Certainly his appointments, on a positive note, made many important appointments of LGBT people to high-level positions in his administration. Then we had, of course, on the negative side, the infamous DOMA brief, which involved Justice Department lawyers writing a brief opposing a lawsuit challenging the Defense of Marriage Act, in which they used some really nasty language toward our community. But then, you know, I think the thing that tops that one off was the number two story, which is the Hate Crimes Act. You know, that was certainly the shining moment, I think, of his first year in office was Congress, not only Congress passing that, but his signing it.
Do you think there has been criticism of Obama not following through on enough of the, you know, at least we thought promises to our community?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Well, do you think there's been some concern about Obama not following through on a number of things that we felt, or maybe wasn't actually true, but we thought that he would be doing in our community?
Very much so, yeah. I think there's a large segment of our community who's been disappointed and increasingly angry about the lack of progress. But, you know, the flip side of that, of course, is the fact that he had a huge mess to clean up after 8 years of the Bush administration. And, you know, he's had 1 year, he's got at least three more. And we do have our first major piece of GLBT civil rights legislation in the forms of the Hate Crimes Act.
Right, right.
And so there's, you know, there's room for improvement, but, you know, there is, I think, some hope as well still.
Okay.
All the hope hasn't been lost.
And what about marriages and divorces?
Marriages and divorces, gay divorce, of course, we had the big gay divorce case here in Dallas. That was number five on our list. Number four was the marriage ups and downs from a national standpoint, with several states passing marriage equality, and, of course, it being repealed by voters in Maine. Number five was a big gay divorce case up here involving a couple that was married in Massachusetts and then moved to Texas. And wanted to get a divorce, and the trial court judge, district court judge in that case, Judge Tina Callahan, has ruled that she has jurisdiction to hear their divorce petition, and she has ruled that that is because the state constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. So, huge
yes.
ruling there by a state district judge. I mean, just incredibly brave, bold ruling, especially given that she's up for re-election this year now, 2010. So, yeah, that's been that put us back, sort of put Texas back in the national spotlight again after the Rainbow Lounge raid, and of course Anissa's recent election has put us in the national spotlight yet again here in Texas. And that was in fact our number six story, and I know you probably think that's low, but we are the Dallas Voice, and we cover our coverage area. Our coverage area is North Texas.
Well, and Dallas has had a number of city council persons elected, GLBT, and you also had a person that ran for mayor not too long ago that had a decent chance.
Yeah, Ed Oakley in 2007 made it into the runoff and lost, of course, and he would have been the first openly GLBT mayor of a top 10, I guess, city. But, you know, one of the key differences there is that Ed had been elected and reelected as a city council member in a single-member district.
Right.
One of 14 of those districts in Dallas. Anise had been elected citywide, three times?
Yeah, Anise was actually elected six times, three times as city council person and three times as the controller. And as we asked her last week, certainly I don't think any of us thought that this would have made such worldwide attention. And basically her answer was, well, you know, when you're a city council person or controller, you're not the face of the city. As mayor, you are the face of the city.
Yeah, very much so. And we had a little bit of that national and international exposure, even just with a gay candidate making the runoff
right.
2 years ago. I mean, we got the CNN, we got the Time magazine, we started to get some international hype about that. But then, of course, he lost the runoff, so it doesn't surprise me that, you know, the level of media attention that it's gotten, and it's great. I mean, I think, you know, one of the keys in all of it, the important things about it is that, you know, just a few city council seats here and there in the big cities is just not enough anymore. We have to, you know, we have to continually achieve higher levels of office, and certainly, you know, and the mayor is a huge step in that direction, and certainly we need some state legislators. And the hope, you know, I think from my standpoint, and I may sound more like an activist than a journalist at this point, is that this will inspire other people to run as openly GLBT and, you know, to have confidence in that, not shy away from it, and, you know, maybe even inspire some people who are already in office to come out.
Yes.
You know,
absolutely.
That's you know, just one of the many side benefits of her victory. But we need a state legislator. I mean, let's not pretend like this is, you know, we've achieved the ultimate goal here. I mean, we need people in the state legislature because, you know, they've looked at it and that they can show you, groups like the Victory Fund can show you that without openly GLBT state legislators, it's very difficult to pass pro-equality legislation. If you look at where the pro-equality, the significant pro-equality legislation has passed and look at those states, every one of them has had at least one openly GLBT legislator to help push that through and to, you know, to show those other people in that body that, you know, I'm just a regular human being who wants equal rights.
Exactly. You know? I couldn't have said that better myself. The National March, how did that affect Dallas?
The National March was a pretty big story for us here. And where did that came in? That came in number 8 on our top 10 list. We had a executive committee member here from Dallas who was someone who had not been an activist prior to actually Prop 8. Got involved in the wake of that and started attending these rallies and protests and made his way onto the executive committee of the National Equality March. We also had a local activist here who became the official historian for that event. And so Dallas played a big role. Cleve Jones was here for our Pride celebration and spoke about less than a month before the march. And we had, I think, a pretty large contingent of people who went up, you know, found a way to get up there. We even had some people, and I think you did down in Houston as well, you had some people carpooling, you know, literally driving across
yes.
the country and back in a matter of a couple of days just
yes.
so they could be there. You know, they can't afford to go and stay in a hotel or even fly up there, but, you know, 5 of them get together and get in a car or van or whatever and drive up there, which is just an incredibly long drive. I've made that drive because my parents live up there. So that really shows you the degree to which young people were inspired by that event. It was for a lot of people their first opportunity to march on Washington, including myself.
Oh,
I was there.
Congratulations.
And, it was a great experience. And the HRC dinner, of course, the night before Obama spoke was, a big deal, too. So important weekend.
And what have we missed on the list?
What have we missed? Well, there was a bad hate crime here in Dallas in 2008. Both suspects in that were sentenced, tried, convicted, and sentenced this year. That was number 7 on our list. Number 9 was the city's decision to cut funding for HIV/AIDS services, which was a result of the recession and the city budget woes. And that was funding that had been in place and that the LGBT community fought to get in place decades ago. And the council eliminated that this year, unfortunately, despite, you know, a lot of work by a lot of people trying to stop them from doing that. And rounding out the list at number 10 was, in fact, the 40th anniversary of Stonewall itself. So number 1 is the Rainbow Lounge, which occurred on the anniversary, and number 10 is the anniversary itself. They're like bookends, if you will.
And most importantly, how's the health of the Dallas Voice, especially after Windows Media shut down some of the largest GLBT newspapers in the country?
You know, we're doing okay. We're fine. And the thing that I tell people about Windows Media is that really didn't have much to do with even the economy, and it certainly didn't have a lot to do with whether those individual papers were profitable from week to week. It had to do with mismanagement.
The corporate management.
Yes, it had to do with them essentially leveraging assets beyond their ability to repay loans. You know, they just kept on going around. And the Houston Voice, unfortunately, was one of those properties that they purchased that it was just way too much weight for them to take on. And I'm not a business person, so I can't, you know, I don't know a lot about the details of it, but, you know, that's from everything I've read and heard, that's my understanding of what happened there. And as you may know, the papers in each of those cities have come back under new ownership. So I think that tells you that there is still a place for the gay press. The fact that those papers have reemerged under new ownership and are now putting out papers every week. But here at The Voice, you know, we're lucky.
Absolutely.
We've got a guy, Robert Moore, who started this paper over 25 years ago and is still the owner and publisher. And he's made some great decisions over the years. And, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm just kissing his butt, but...
No, but, you know, you've got, what, two full-time writers up there, including yourself?
We have a five-person editorial department. We have myself and one other person in news, and then we have two people in our Life Plus Style section, which is basically entertainment, and then we have our senior editor, Tammy Nash. So we have five people in editorial, as well as a full sales staff, production staff, classified, everything. I mean, I think we're probably doing as well as, if not better than, any gay paper in the country.
Well, fabulous. Yeah. And John, I really appreciate you contributing to Queer Voices and talking to us. And the best of luck with the Dallas Voice and your work, because it is very important to us.
Well, and yours too, and this may sound self-serving, but, you know, I think people need to support the LGBT media, because I think we play an important role in this whole thing, both from, you know, a radio standpoint and from a print standpoint, so, you know, and an online standpoint now as well, so... keep it up. Keep up the great work. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. John Wright is a writer for the Dallas Voice, and he joins us occasionally. John, thank you for joining us. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Thanks.
I'm Michelle Pleasant.
And I'm Karen James.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the 3 weeks ending January 2nd, 2010. Attacks on sexual minorities have escalated in recent months in several African countries. They've been fueled by conservative religious leaders and politicians, and in at least some locales by right-wing political groups and so-called change therapy promoters in the United States. A bill scheduled for final parliamentary debate in the East African nation of Uganda this month proposes life in prison and even the death penalty for certain cases of private, consensual, adult homosexual sex. It would also punish those who fail to report a suspected gay person to the authorities with a 3-year prison term. People who promote or assist homosexuality could be jailed for 7 years. The bill would also imprison Ugandan citizens who are reported to have had same-gender sex in other countries. There's been widespread international condemnation of the legislation, most notably by the United Kingdom, France, and Sweden. And according to a December 19th report in the DC Agenda LGBT newspaper, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni assured U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Johnny Carson on two separate occasions in late October and early December that he wouldn't support the bill. However, Museveni's ethics minister, James Nsababuturo, told the Reuters news agency in late December that we now think a life sentence could be better because it gives room for offenders to be rehabilitated. Killing them might not be helpful. The bill's sponsor, MP David Bahati, has argued that it will curb HIV infections and protect the traditional family.
Proposals for revisions to Rwanda's penal code would impose up to 10 years in prison for private consensual adult homosexual acts and even outlaw counseling for gay people. The law criminalizes any person who practices, encourages, or sensitizes people of the same sex to sexual relation or any sexual practice. But the Kigali-based New Times reported on December 23rd that lawmakers in the East Central African nation are concerned that the proposals would conflict with provisions of the International Charter on Civil Rights, to which Rwanda is a signatory. Government officials have said that the purpose of the law has been misinterpreted, claiming that its main targets are people of any sexual orientation who have sex with underage children. But Bernadette Kanzari leads Parliament's Political Affairs Committee, which is charged with revising the country's 33-year-old penal code. And she told the New Times that an article in the legislation, which is still under debate, proposes to punish those who use their sexual orientation to spread the gay gospel to minors. A bill was passed last April in neighboring Burundi that made homosexuality an offense punishable by up to 2 years in prison. Several global human rights groups have condemned that action and the proposals in Rwanda, saying that each government's treatment of gays and lesbians is worsening.
Human rights groups have also criticized the West African country of Senegal for its repressive policies against gay people. According to a December 28th report by Agence France-Presse, 24 men were arrested on Christmas Eve for homosexual activities, which carry a sentence upon conviction of up to 5 years in prison. Police officials said the men were allegedly engaging in homosexual acts and holding an unauthorized party in a house at a seaside resort south of Dakar. They were released the next day, but a police source said the two organizers of the party had been interrogated and investigations are continuing. The source said officers found condoms, lubricants, wigs, and makeup when they raided the house. Nine men arrested during a safe sex seminar at a private apartment in Dakar about a year ago were convicted of indecent acts against nature and being members of a criminal organization. A Senegalese appeals court overturned the ruling in April and ordered their release.
And a gay couple in the southern African nation of Malawi was arrested in late December after they held what's been variously reported as the country's first same-gender public wedding ceremony or an engagement party. They were taken into custody at their home 2 days later. A judge refused bail for Taiwange Chimbalanga and Stephen Mungeza and ordered them held on gross indecency charges while a police investigation continues. Part of that investigation reportedly will include medical testing to determine whether or not they'd engaged in unnatural practices between males, which is punishable by up to 14 years in prison. Hundreds of people reportedly attended the December 26th ceremony held at a guest house in Malawi's largest city, Blantyre. Mungeza told the crowd that he and Chimbalanga had been living together for 5 months after meeting each other at church. Their lawyer told reporters that the couple had not yet consummated their relationship.
That's probably not the case in Argentina, where Alex Freire and Jose Maria de Bello were civilly wed on December 28th in what's been described as the first same-gender marriage in Latin America. The state-run Telam news agency said that less than a month after being denied a license in Buenos Aires, after a court ruling ordering it was overturned, the men traveled to the southernmost state of Tierra del Fuego, where marriage equality-supporting governor Fabiana Rios welcomed the event in the capital of Ushuaia. She issued a formal decree ordering the Civil Registry Office to marry the couple. An official of the federal government's anti-discrimination agency attended the wedding. Claudio Morgado called the ceremony historic, but Eduardo Sambrisi, who represents the Corporation of Catholic Lawyers, said the marriage is null and void because Argentine law does not allow same-gender couples to wed. The country's Supreme Court is expected to issue a ruling on an unrelated marriage equality case sometime this year.
As expected, the Washington, D.C. City Council passed marriage equality legislation by a vote of 11-2 on December 15th. Mayor Adrian Fenty signed the bill into law 3 days later, which sent it to Congress for an automatic 30-day review period. Federal lawmakers have the power to overturn any law passed in the district, but according to multiple sources, that's not expected to happen, although a few congressional Republicans have vocally condemned the new law. Opposition forces are also in Superior Court trying to overturn a decision by the D.C. Board of Elections and Ethics that rejected a proposed ballot measure to repeal the law. Under earlier legislation passed in 2009 and not challenged in Congress, the district already recognizes legal same-gender marriages performed elsewhere.
And Mexico City's Legislative Assembly voted 39-20 on December 21st to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. Mayor Marcelo Ebrard supported this measure. He's rejected calls to veto it from conservative politicians and the Roman Catholic Church, which called the bill immoral and reprehensible. The measure redefines marriage as the free uniting of two people. It also explicitly legalizes adoption by same-gender couples. It will require changes in federal law for gay and lesbian couples who marry in Mexico City to gain such national benefits as pension, inheritance, and Social Security rights. Politicians from President Felipe Calderón's conservative National Action Party have threatened to challenge the Mexico City law in the country's Supreme Court, arguing that it violates the federal constitution.
Jubilant lesbian and gay couples celebrated the new year in New Hampshire with wedding vows as the U.S. state's new marriage equality law came into force on January 1st. About 15 couples braved the cold to exchange vows outside the New Hampshire State House in Concord. Other couples planned private ceremonies around the state. The law grants no new rights but replaces civil unions, which were previously the only category of legal recognition open to gay and lesbian couples. Same-gender matrimony is now legal in the U.S. states of Massachusetts, Connecticut, Iowa, Vermont, and New Hampshire. Under DOMA, however, the Odious Defense of Marriage Act, passed during the Clinton administration, the federal government does not recognize those marriages. Lesbian and gay couples can also civilly marry in Belgium, Canada, the Netherlands, Norway, South Africa, Spain, and Sweden.
Portugal's socialist government has formally introduced its marriage equality legislation. Parliament is expected to approve the measure in the coming week. A majority of MPs belong to the government party or other parties that support same-gender marriage, so there is little doubt that the bill will pass. It would take effect in April. While most LGBT advocacy groups praise the measure, some activists criticize the bill because it specifically excludes access to adoption for same-gender couples.
The Philippines Commission on Elections on December 17th upheld its earlier decision to block the LGBT group Ang Lalad from registering as a political party and fielding congressional candidates in the May national elections. The vote to uphold the decision by a smaller group of commissioners was 4-3. It is crystal clear, the commission ruled, that Ang Lalad tolerates immorality which offends religious beliefs. The decision also said the Bible and the Quran call homosexuality unseemly and transgressive. Ang Lalad said it would appeal the rejection to the nation's Supreme Court.
And finally, celebrated 35-year-old United Kingdom rugby legend Gareth Thomas came out in a December 18th interview with the Daily Mail. The move was particularly noteworthy because Thomas is not retired. He still plays for the Cardiff Blues. He married his high school sweetheart Gemma in 2002, but the couple separated in 2006. Thomas said he didn't come out publicly until now because I knew I would never be accepted as a gay man and still achieve what I wanted to achieve in the game. It's been really tough for me hiding who I really am, he told the Mail. But I don't want it to be like that for the next young person who wants to play rugby or some frightened young kid. Thomas told the Mail that he doesn't know of any other professional gay rugby players, but he said, statistically, I can't be the only one.
That's News Wrap for the 3 weeks ending January 2nd, 2010. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Michelle Pleasant.
And I'm Taryn James.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, we've had an exciting day today, didn't we, Tim?
There was something that happened in the news. I'm trying to think about it.
Hell froze over.
A very, very extraordinary day.
Well, that's not why we brought you on here tonight. Actually, even though today was a great day, we have things going on in the community, and one of them is this quarterly community leaders meeting.
Absolutely. And the new mayor would want us to continue with our community work, since that's where she came from the GLBT community and also neighborhood organizing community. So we will continue that work in her honor. The Houston GLBT Community Center hosts a quarterly meeting, the Community Leaders Networking Group. The next meeting is this Saturday, January 9th. At the Community Center, which is located at 3400 Montrose at Hawthorne, Suite 207, on the second floor. It's from 1 to 5 p.m. Let me hasten to add, you don't have to come for the entire 4 hours. You don't have to stay the entire 4 hours. We encourage people to come when they are available, or come and stay for a few minutes, or come and stay for the entire time if they're diehards like some of us. It's a great opportunity for individuals in the community who are involved with organizations and causes to come and network, share information about their activities and their organizations, complain, gossip, just generally visit. It's a great place for people to also form partnerships and collaborations. We've had a number of those come out of the Community Leaders Networking Group, which I think is one of the most positive things we've done, or been able to facilitate. Groups that may not have worked together in the past see that, oh, they're working on some of the same kind of things or complementary things, and join forces. And I think that's an exciting thing in our community.
And basically, what is the format of the meeting?
Well, the format is actually changing a little bit this month at the recommendation of one of our long-term participants, our friend Sally Huffer for the Counseling Center, in part because we've been a victim of our own success. When the Community Leaders Networking Group started out, we had maybe three or four people attend. And when you have three or four people attend, everybody can pretty much talk, and it's just like a family
gathering.
Occasionally,
Ray lets us get a word in.
Occasionally, Ray Hill lets us get a word in, and you know, we have three or four people. You can push him aside, and we love Ray. But now we've gotten to the point where we have maybe 12 to 15 people at every meeting, and we need a little bit more structure to make sure that everybody gets a chance to talk who wants to. Not everybody at the meetings wants to share, but to give everybody an opportunity. So what we're going to try this month, this quarter, when you come into the community center, just sign in with me. We have never been very formal. We're not going to be formal now, but just sign in with me, and then we'll go around the room, and everybody has a chance to introduce themselves briefly. Then we go back around, and then people will have an opportunity to talk at greater length in the order in which they signed in, so that everybody will kind of have an equal opportunity to speak. And then once we go through that list, anyone who came in later in the meeting, then we'll, you know, start over with those people. Because what had happened was we would have so many people coming, and some of us like to share a little bit longer than others, like to take a few more minutes than others, and we would get to the point where we'd get to the end of the meeting when everybody was just worn out, and or it was 5 o'clock, and there were some people who didn't get a chance to speak.
Sometimes like you.
And sometimes it would be me with the community center. And I'd be thinking, wait a minute, I want to speak. So we're going to try this and just put a little bit more structure on it, but we're going to remain very informal, very welcoming of everybody in the community. You don't have to be a community leader to participate, however you define leader, whether that's elected or appointed or self-imagined. Anyone in the community is welcome at the center, 1 to 5, and you can come any time. You know, the structure that we're putting on it doesn't mean that you won't get to speak. You will. It's just that, you know, the people who come early will get the first crack at sharing their information.
Tim, if you've never been to this event or never been to anything like that, what could I expect? I come walking in there, mm-hmm. I sign in, mm-hmm. you know, what's it going to be like?
Well, what we do is we generally sit in kind of a circle and
kumbaya.
Kumbaya. We join hands, yes. if you feel like it. But we'll go around the room, and you know, everybody. I ask everybody to introduce themselves and their organization if they wish to. Most of us in the room, of course, already know one another from, you know, years of community work. But we do have new people. So we like to introduce everyone, so we go around the room, and then we'll go back around, and people will have an opportunity to speak. I think what we're saying is you have 5 minutes to speak, and in this case, it'll be in the order which you signed in. Now, not everybody who comes to the meeting wants to speak. Some just want to, you know, observe and listen, and that's certainly great. We don't put anybody on the spot.
So no one's required to talk.
No.
It's just a matter of, to participate, you just have to be there.
Just be there. And then once we go around the room, and everybody will have a chance to have their 5 minutes and make their presentation, informal presentation. Then we open it. Then we do open it up to, you know, back and forth, and everybody can share, and people can ask questions and talk back and forth. We just want to make sure that everybody has that opportunity to say what he or she came to say. You know, for instance, if you, you know, I know that the, you know, president of LHI and Pinchak is coming, and one of the things she wants to talk about is their event in February, their annual fundraiser in February. And so she, you know, obviously she, you know, I said, well, come and sign up, and we'll make sure you have an opportunity to talk about that, and probably other things as well, and their upcoming Rainbow Health Fair. And but, you know, we just want to make sure people have an opportunity to share that kind of information, because that's really the whole, one of the purposes is that we can share this information with one another, and hopefully some of us will then take it back to our groups and say, hey, you know, I heard about this great, you know, event fundraiser that LHI is having, or, you know, I heard about this, you know, the fund drive for KPFT is coming up, or I heard that the community center's having a reading series, or any number of things, and, you know, we'll share that information and help us get the word out amongst ourselves.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. And but it's very, you know, it's very informal. I don't want to make it sound like it's some, you know, big scary thing, but you know, because we're all family. We're, as I say, most of us know one another and have known each other for years, and have been in the trenches together. But it's one of the nice things about the Community Leaders Networking Group is it's really grown out of what the participants want. And the participants really indicated that they wanted a place where they could speak. There's no agenda. There's no
organization.
It's not a
no
new
dues or fees or
no
anything
dues
like
or fees
that.
We're not trying to raise funds for cause, which is incredibly important. All of organizations need money, but we're not trying to raise money. There's no keynote speaker. There's no, you know, chicken dinner.
No wonder it's so successful.
Right. So I think, and you know, I think once we really started doing focusing on that, you know, people really responded to that and enjoyed it, and they've come back. You know, most of our people come back month after quarter after quarter, and I think another reason it's been successful is we do have it once a quarter, because, you know, even just once a month, that monthly thing comes around really fast.
Well, we have a lot of monthly things
for those of us that are doing a lot of monthly things, but our weekly things.
Well, the reason I wanted to ask was because, you know, by the name of it, if you're someone out there, you're getting involved or you want to get involved, and maybe you want to be a leader,
right?
If this is their opportunity to meet the other leaders,
sure,
and to network with them.
Absolutely.
To get started. And I wanted to make sure that everyone knew.
Right.
You know, you don't have to speak. You don't have to belong to an organization.
Right.
Just come.
Right. Right. And in fact, we've had some, that's a very good point. We've had some people come who don't belong to organizations in the way that many of us do. Or maybe they've, you know, attended some organization meetings, or they might attend a caucus meeting, or but they're not necessarily a member. But they're just kind of trying things out, and they've come. And so we definitely encourage that. And, you know, people of all ages. We have, you know, folks my age. We have older. We have, we've had a number of younger people come recently. Some of the folks, young people from Impact Houston have started coming. Which is, you know, very exciting, because they're such a dynamic group and on the community scene. But right, it is also a great opportunity to meet some community leaders, talk to them about what they do, maybe, you know, hear a little, you know, kitchen talk on what's successful, what's not, what's working in the community, what maybe isn't working in the community, what we need, what our hopes are, what our, you know, aspirations are. I'm sure on Saturday we will talk a great deal about the inauguration today of Mayor Parker, how exciting that is, what that means, what that might mean for the community, what that might mean for our organizations. So I imagine that will be a big topic of discussion, and it should be. It's something we should continue to talk about and revel in, because, boy, that was an unbelievable day today.
She gave a wonderful speech, and it was a wonderful inauguration. I mean, the entertainment was just fabulous.
It knocked me out.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on at the community center.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Jack. Well, it's a very exciting time at the community center. We are rebuilding and revitalizing for the new year, like a lot of organizations. We've had some tough times, but we are bouncing back with a full slate of events and activities, which really really started in the last part of 2009. Some very positive collaborations with a couple of dynamic groups in our community that are also trying to rebuild but are being very successful. Unhinged Productions, the theater company, has made the community center its home. Q-Fest, which is the GLBT Film Festival, which is also in a rebuilding phase, but is working very closely with the community center, and that's exciting, and we hope to see them continue to grow and to help them where we can. But we have a number of things coming up this month. We have the networking group on the 9th that we were just talking about. We have a community center dinner night, which is on the 12th. It's the second Tuesday of every month, and we have that at West Gray Cafe at 6:30. It's just another opportunity for people to get together, or this time over a meal, visit and talk and carry on. We're very excited on January 14th to be premiering the Community Center Reading Series. It's a new reading series that we're going to have featuring local GLBT authors and playwrights, and then also some who come through town.
Great idea.
If they're on a bank,
thanks.
If they're, you know, on a book tour, although book tours have been greatly reduced, particularly for GLBT books. But we're starting that, and it's actually, we're very excited that the Houston Public Library got wind of it, and they asked to participate. And, of course, we were thrilled with that idea. So it's a partnership with the library. We're having, and the first one will be January 14th, which is a Thursday at 6:30 at the Freed Montrose Library, which is right there at 4100 Montrose near Richmond. It's a book written by Rick Elliott, who is a local writer, and it's an inspirational book called Faith Journeys of the Heart. He's very excited about it, and he's very excited about the reading. And the library is extremely excited, and they're going to serve some light refreshments and have just opened up the library to us. And this was something we're hoping it will be a monthly program. It will kind of depend on who's out there with new books or plays or what programs we can come up with a library. And it will either be at the Freed Library or at the downtown library. We may switch off. But we're very excited about the prospect of having it in the libraries. Mm-hmm. And the library is very excited about us having it in one of their facilities. We're also starting in January a monthly benefit cookout at George, the club on Fairview. One of the things we need to do, as all organizations need to do, is raise some money to support our operating budget. And so this will be on the third Saturday of every month at 2 o'clock, 2 to 6, $5, burger, chicken. So I hope everybody will come out to George, which is located on Fairview, 617 Fairview, and support us with that. Then we have some other stuff coming up. We hope you'll check us out at
where can we find out this information if we didn't have pad and pencil?
The best thing to do is check our website, which is under construction, but we will send you to our Facebook page. It's hglbtcc.org, or just Google us, HoustonGLBTCommunityCenter.org, and that will take you to a page where you can get some information. Or call us at 713-524-3818.
And just to recap, the meeting on Saturday is at what time?
Meet on Saturday, the Community Leaders Networking Group. Don't have to be a leader to participate. Saturday, January 9th, 1 to 5 p.m. Feel free to drop in anytime or to stay the whole 4 hours if you like at the Community Center, 3400 Montrose Boulevard at Hawthorne, Suite 207, free parking in the adjacent garage.
Tim Brookover is with the Houston GLBT Community Center, and he joins us occasionally to give us updates on what's going on. You're listening to Queer Voices.
The wait is over, and KPFT is accepting nominations for listener members to its program council. The KPFT Program Council is an advisory body founded to give broader community input on programming. The PC works with KPFT's management around a range of programming matters. KPFT is seeking 6 listener members to participate in the program council. Visit KPFT.org to apply now. at kpft.org. You can find full information about the program council, what it does, and how it works. You can also submit your own nomination to the program council. KPFT encourages members of our diverse listening audience to get involved in this radio station. Visit kpft.org for information about the program council. This is KPFT, Houston.
Pacifica is listener-sponsored radio.
What does that mean?
Listener sponsorship is an answer to the practical problem of getting better radio programs and keeping them.
A focus on advertisers or the mass audience accounts for the mediocrity of corporate radio.
When listeners support the radio they enjoy, their choices become better.
Listener sponsorship takes control of your radio out of the hands of companies and into the hands of the community.
But maintaining this sort of radio requires you.
Your pledge of support keeps KPFT on the air as a vital community resource.
So call our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314, to become a member today.
You can even go online at kpft.org to make your pledge.
Your pledge is essential to keep listener sponsorship viable for generations to come.
So call 713-526-4000 to support KPFT.
This is commercial-free listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio.
KPFT, Houston.
Yeah, we'll try that one again.
That
was a cool radio frag. This is Brian Levinka.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And in January, we kind of
start... We got some cute bunnies here tonight.
Yes, I was kind of killing my segue there, but January I always like to think of as kind of the beginning of fundraising season in Houston, and we have two very... eligible bachelors.
Oh, no, I'm not a bachelor.
Oh, no. No.
We have one eligible bachelor.
I was trying to use the bunny angle. Two very involved community members that are part of an organization called Bunnies on the Bayou. And introduce yourselves, please.
My name is Vince Flickinger, and I'm president of Bunnies on the Bayou this year.
And I'm Jack Berger. I'm the vice president this year.
So what is Bunnies on the Bayou?
Well, Bunnies on the Bayou is Houston, or actually Texas' largest outdoor cocktail party. The event originally started in 1979 as a birthday party for a group of people who hosted their birthdays at an apartment complex in Montrose. It was originally a pool party. It evolved, got larger, became a benefit by donating food, and had its other kind of... versions, as we all have talked about in the past.
Nefarious names.
Yes, and eventually became an official nonprofit with the actual registered name of Bunnies on the Bayou, Inc.
Okay, I got to know, where did Bunnies on the Bayou come from? How did they come up with that?
The group actually decided to come up with a name, and since the birthdays were always in April around Easter, they started holding it on Easter, and the group actually got together back in, I think it was the early 90s, and voted on the name, and it became Bunnies on the Bayou.
Oh, okay. I've always wondered that.
And the name actually became because of the time of year and then where the location of the party started to occur, which was on the bayou.
On the bayou.
Yeah. And in what year did it move to the bayou?
In 1990... Oh, shoot.
Don't look at me. I wasn't gay then.
I wasn't born then. No, I'm just kidding.
Lightning's going to strike.
No, I was born in the 60s. It was in the 90s, and I'm sorry, I don't know that.
I was just putting you in
the
spot.
I know it. I just don't know it.
Well, if you haven't been, Bunnies on the Bayou is a huge outdoor gay fest, and it's on Easter Sunday. And I know the people that are going to Easter services at church are like, what the heck is going on? But... I wanted to talk about tonight the other event that Bunnies on the Bayou does, and that is called...
Snow Bunnies.
Snow Bunnies. Tell us about that.
Well, we're in year...
It's our fifth almost annual event for Snow Bunnies.
Correct. And what we were looking at is another opportunity for us to raise some additional money so that for the 8 to 12, somewhere in that range, charities that benefit from the big Bunnies on the Bayou, that we'd have even more... revenue to split up between the organizations. So we looked at a couple of different options. Snow Bunnies was a pretty obvious one for us to do something in the wintertime. Our summer event, Bunnies in Heat, hasn't quite taken off yet, but that's hopefully something we'll do in the future.
I see. Now tell us, like, when, where, what?
Well, Snow Bunnies. January 17th, which is a Sunday, 5 to 10 at Rock Bar, which is right across from... The Wortham Fish Plaza, where we actually hold our event. So if you're familiar with where Bunny's is held, it's right across the street.
Texas Avenue.
Yeah, 530 Texas Avenue is the address.
That's where we had our inauguration of Mayor Anise today.
Yes, right across the street from the inauguration.
And the nice thing is it's the King holiday weekend, so no excuses. Maybe you don't have to go to work Monday, so come party with the bunnies and stay late.
Oh, yes. That's right.
And we're asking for a $5 donation at the door. Uh-huh. It's tax deductible if you need that. And we hope that everybody can make it because it's going to be a lot of fun. Resident DJ for a rock bar is Lisa Lozano, and she'll be spinning for us.
What can I expect when I get there?
Okay. A lot of fun.
I've never been there. I don't know, and I'm saying, gee, I think I'll go to this.
Well, unlike Bunny's on the Bayou, where your admission ticket includes all the beverages that you can consume.
Okay.
This one is more on the cash bar as you go plan, but with hopefully some of the same atmosphere and fun. And it's really just a good opportunity for friends to get together and have a great time. If you're new in town and you want to experience all aspects of being with the bunnies, this is a good starter kit because you won't be prepared for what you'll see on Easter Sunday.
No, I'm not even prepared, and I've been many, many, many years in a row. Now, let's talk about what do the bunnies on the Bayou support? What sort of organizations have you supported in the past, and who do y'all give money to?
Well, it's a variety of quote-unquote community organizations. We basically support any type of nonprofit within our community that helps support the community through arts, education, healthcare, food. I mean, anybody who needs some type of help who is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, Bunnies will accept an application for. We have some requirements that you have to fulfill, but we will accept your application, review them, and we pick our beneficiaries for that year, our beneficiaries, or what we call
beneficiaries.
So everything from Lazarus House to Bering Omega to
SNAP to
AIDS Foundation Houston.
Sisters. I mean, the list goes. It's a pretty extensive list.
We have a question from the audience.
Oh, you are listening to KPFT Houston.
Oh, we had to do a top of the hour radio spot, station announcement.
Since when I tried to play it, it just garbled.
Yes, that's part of the FCC. Regulations. Okay, so any organization, I guess the submission deadline has already occurred.
Yeah, so usually our deadline is at the end of November, and then we kind of let the holidays slide by, take a break, and then we have a committee that gets together in January, which is now, and reviews those, makes proposals, puts everything together, and it's put to a vote, and we determine it by the end of January.
I see.
Now, when you've got the snow bunnies,
right?
And you've got bunnies on the bayou, and then you've got bunnies in heat. So you've got three.
Not yet. We're working on bunnies in heat. It's an idea that we've been brainstorming about.
Ran it up the flagpole, see if anybody salutes, calls you up, and knows about it. Well, speaking of that, how do they get in touch with you guys?
Through our website, www.bunniesonthebayou.org. It's in the process of being revamped right now, but if you need an email address, it would be info@bunniesonthebayou.org, and that would come to a few of us, and we all respond as quickly as possible. We're an all-volunteer organization, so we try to do as best we can.
Now, how many people attend Bunnies on the Bayou each year? Do you have any idea?
Last year, we were about 1,800. Yeah. I can't remember the number. We're about 1,800. Last year, it was very successful. We had a huge storm, but around 12:30, it cleared. Our party started at 1, left.
This is an indication that God likes the gays. Because it rained in the morning, and then the sun shone.
The clouds parted, the rain disappeared. Yeah. And we actually had increased our beverage purchase last year by, I think, 30% over the previous year, and we ran out within 3 hours, and we still had 2 hours to go. So it was a great sign that people came, people stayed, and people had a great time. So
one of the nice things that we did last year is we brought back Dan Metter as our DJ, but because he's also a weatherman, he told us if we had the party set up from our operations standpoint by 11, we'd be in good shape, and it worked to a T.
Now that's you have now a DJ / weatherman spin the music and also predict the cold.
Now
front.
That's good. That is good.
Well, I think he waved his wand,
and we're on a budget, so we get a little bit of both.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad this upcoming event is indoors.
Yes.
Correct. Yeah, because it's looking you know, get through this cold weather. And, you know, the great thing about bunnies, the warmer the weather, the better the time that everyone has, because there's less clothing worn. And
that's not why people go there, right? They go there for the warm community, giving back.
Oh, okay.
No.
Friendship and camaraderie.
Right.
And so are people going to be wearing bunny ears at this?
Usually every time you'll have a number of people come in some sort of costume. We've had people come in ski outfits, dressed up to look like bunnies as well, and so you'll see some of that. And of course, the bunnies will be showing their ears when they're there.
Yeah,
some will be showing some tail.
Probably
too,
not to the same extent that we have on Easter Sunday.
Easter
with
Sunday's
the pink tie-dyed poodles and all those.
So if you're joining us, we're talking to the president and vice president of Bunnies on the Bayou. But it's Vic Flicking.
Vince
Flickinger,
yes.
And Jack Berger.
Now, who's going to be there? I mean, you know, who's welcome?
Everybody.
Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody.
GLBNT. GLBTNS. So if you're straight and you want to come, that's just fine with us, too.
Oh. We take their money.
They actually show up on our Easter Sunday event. We've had grandmothers walking by ask what's going on, and we are very honest, and we tell them, and they make a donation and walk in for about an hour or so, and sometimes we don't ever see them come back out.
You can lose yourself at Bunnies on the Bayou.
You could.
Well, 1,800 people, that's a lot of people.
What's the most you've ever had?
That I'm not sure, but I think it was close to 2,000. Where we have our party, there's a pretty much a limit as to the capacity, and so I think we're pretty set at 2,000 people. And I think we hit that probably in the 90s. We haven't hit that in a while.
And one of the things we added in the last couple of years is VIP tents. So if you want to have your own private
Camp Bunny.
That's one of the things I like to go is look at the tents and all the different decorations.
Right. Everyone gets to do their own theme, and we have a contest for the best decorated and best themed tents.
Yeah. Now, are these organizations that have their private tents? Or
it's a combination. We've had some commercial companies and private individuals who've gotten a group together. So it varies. And it seems funny that, you know, the commercial groups do a great job of decorating their tents, but the ones that have been winning are the actual individual groups who come together. And
they have their little theme.
Yeah, they create their own. Like, we had Play Bunnies, and we've had, I mean, just a Gay Boy Mansion, and I'm trying to think of what all the other ones are.
Some guys that had all the different egg dishes on the back of the
church.
They were kind of cute.
So it's created, we've done this for 3 years now, and it's added a new dimension to our party, because we've activated our upper plaza, which has always been kind of like a little transition area.
Kind of
If we can say thanks to our great friends at Bud Light, who do so much for Bunnies.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much.
And how much do y'all typically raise in a year?
Anywhere from $40,000 to $50,000 is what we give away. And by our bylaws, all the money that we take in the day of at the gate, and ticket purchases and tips and everything, we are dedicated to give away. We cannot take that. So,
not a bad per capita for a 5-hour party.
Not bad at all. I would say definitely, especially in the gay community. That's awesome, and it's a great time. Yeah. Now, okay, has anyone ever fallen in the bayou?
Yes. Well, not in the bayou. They've fallen in the little pool at the bottom.
Yes.
And we've had some people actually have to climb in there to get things out. And last year we had a snake. And someone, you know, got really butch on us, walked right in there, grabbed the snake, and took it out.
But no flyboy injuries.
No, the flyboys did just
fine. Oh, yeah, you always have the flyboys that perform. Yes.
On the water.
On the water, yeah. It's always the highlight, especially when it's really cold and they're wearing the skimpy outfits, and you're like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. But we still want the nice 74 and sunny.
Yes.
That's perfect for bunnies.
So tell our listeners again about the upcoming event.
It's Snow Bunnies, fifth almost annual event, and it's January 17th, which is on a Sunday, from 5 to 10 p.m., and it's a $5 donation at the door, and we'll have DJ Lisa Lozano at Rock Bar.
I think it's Jessica Lozano.
Oh, sorry, Jessica Lozano. I actually went to school with Lisa Lozano, so if she's listening.
You're not available. You already said that. But so, I am.
Okay, so, this isn't
Jennifer's rubbing my leg.
Dating show. If we have listeners out there that maybe are interested in Bunnies on the Bayou, how can they... Can anyone become a bunny?
Basically, we do have a membership drive, per se, that we start in August, September, and we accept members through December. And basically, we put the word out and people contact us. It's mostly through social connections and people you know and meet who show an interest. And we'll invite you to a little gathering and we'll talk about the event. It's very informal. You can ask as many questions as you want. We're very upfront and honest, and we'll tell you basically whatever you need to know, and then we leave it up to you to get back with us to decide. But
and what sort of obligations are there time-wise and kind of volunteer work-wise?
It's pretty, I think it's pretty light considering what you could be doing, but it's, at first it's a one time a month meeting for like the first 4 months, and then after that, you know, they increase, and there's some other outside meetings that you do in your subcommittees, but it's fairly light considering the number of people who are in our group, and it's more of a lot of fun when you have your meetings. You know, they'll meet at restaurants or someone's house, and they'll have drinks, and they'll work, and everybody will get their assignments and go off their different way, but it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of people doing a lot of work.
Right, so basically we have it split between operations and everything else, and because we're so labor-intensive the day of on Easter Sunday, you know, we've got, you know, the porta potty committee and the tent, VIP tent committee and the bars committee. And,
it's a very big operation. Yeah.
And we have a ton of great volunteers day of as well. So organizations that want to participate as bartenders or helpers for cleanup or tear down or set up, always, always welcome. And we do have some fine quality shirts.
Yeah. In fact, that's one thing that's been happening a lot is our beneficiaries have been coming to us and saying, you know, we want to staff this bar. And they pretty much take the bar the whole day. And people have become used to seeing these different organizations take over.
The Colt 45.
Yeah, in fact, Colt 45, even when they're not a beneficiary, they still want that bar and they still want to come in because they have such a great time.
You meet all kinds
everybody.
Of interesting people.
Yes, you do. I know some people who get quite a few numbers when they're manning the bars.
So if this is you and you're interested in signing up and becoming a bunny on the Bayou, or a bunny?
Also, go into the website.
Yes, and it's info@bunniesonthebayou.org if you want to email us directly.
And that's it.
Yeah. So check out their event on Sunday, January 17th.
Rock Bar, 5 to 10.
At the Rock Bar. That's at Angelica Center?
Angelica, yep. Yeah. It's on
it's
upstairs.
It's a Bayou place across.
On the Verizon Wireless.
It's kind of like
site.
The patio that
goes
overlooks.
It goes upstairs. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Oh, okay. All right. So
great,
now I know
great
where
views
it is.
Up there.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And then go to the website, and there's a donation at the door. What's the website again?
www.BunniesOnTheBayou.org. Yes, all spelled out.
And we've been talking to the president and vice president of Bunnies on the Bayou. Thank you, guys, and check them out on Sunday.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. This is Queer Voices.
Which one was chicken, which one egg? So many things get lost, baby. So many things just change. And you have been so many things to me along the way. I've kept a vigil at your doorway, and I've tried to see it your way. I've cultivated sadness, oh so bright, on all those sleepless nights. Far too precious, and we waste so much time fighting over what to call, where to put it, how to do it. Why can't we just be it? I'll be yours and you'll be mine. I'll move on, I'll be fine, I always am. This time I love the thing you made of me, even if you can't. And if this road comes back again, hope things are better. I hope we fit together. Love could never be the ground I stand on, but love has always been the air I breathe. I know that I breathe easy. Maybe we end up together. Maybe I'll just fade away. But I've kept a vigil at your doorway. I have tried to see it your way. I've tried to let you go. I've tried everything I know. So many things get lost, baby. So many things get lost along the way. So many things. So many things.
I'd like to thank J.D. Doyle for the music. That was Amy Campbell. This poetry from the album O Heart 2. And by the way, if you want to see the playlist, the songs, details about the songs that we play on the show, go to the Twitter site for Queer Voices, because Summer is keeping that up to date with all the information about our guests and our websites, and also about the music that we are playing. This is Queer Voices.
We're back. This is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee again.
Yes, and we were talking earlier.
We had a real cutie in here now.
Well, we were
talking. Other than Brian, of course.
Oh, but I'm like the resident. We were talking earlier about Easter weekend and Bunnies in the Bayou. So to give an equal representation to our community, we have the president of Bayou City Boys Club.
Which is the next day.
It's actually the day before.
Oh, the day before. Well, I knew it was on the same weekend.
Billy Underwood is in the studio tonight. Welcome, Billy.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me this evening. It's funny that you mentioned Bunnies being here. It was nice to see Vince and some of the other guys here this evening. A lot of people get us confused with them. We are actually two separate organizations.
Right.
And their event, which is one of my favorite events, is a wonderful event to go to for recovery after our event.
You can't say that that's one of your favorite events as president of BCBC.
Well, it's a wonderful event.
No, I'm just kidding. I love both Vince, and they're both good.
Oh, so, I have to. Sidebar on the Jungle. When I've been living in Houston since 1980, mm-hmm. and Jungle was one of the first events I went out in that I went to.
Everybody well, mine too. I moved here. I moved here in 96.
It was
so.
Instead of hanging out in the dark bars, it was a place to go, an event,
right.
And I really appreciate that. It was it made the difference in Houston being a much more wonderful city than it was in the beginning.
Well, if there are listeners that aren't as privileged as you, Jennifer, Billy, can you tell us what Jungle is and what they can expect?
Well, sure.
What is Jungle?
Jungle, it's a wonderful event. We're actually in our 18th year this year.
Our coming of age.
I'm wonderful. I'm so glad that you hit on that. That's our theme this year is coming of age. And it's going to kind of follow the Lion King, just to kind of talk about that a little bit. But we're in our 18th year, the Bayou City Boys Club is. And we started out actually as a birthday party back in the 90s, back in 1993, and it was as the AIDS and HIV crisis was hitting a bit of its pinnacle, and some of our founding members at that time were losing quite a few friends, and decided at the time that they were celebrating a birthday party, they felt that they needed to do something in the community to help. And what it is it started out as a small fundraiser, as a birthday party, and it has morphed into this wonderful event that we call Jungle.
And like we said earlier, it happens Easter weekend?
Yes. Our event is the Easter before, or the Saturday before Easter, or Easter Saturday, as I like to call it. And our event starts, actually, we have three events that actually lead up the entire weekend. We have a Thursday night opening night party, which is going to be at Meteor this year. We have had it there for the last few years, and we really appreciate Meteor working with us on putting this event together. This year, what we have worked up is a Friday night event. We have a whole package for the whole entire weekend. Our Thursday night event is a free event, obviously, at Meteor, because it corresponds with their regular club operations. But they have opened a portion of their club up to us to get our weekend started. Our Friday night event this year is going to be at Rich's. We do have a mainline DJ this year for the event at Rich's.
Can you release that name?
Sure, I can give that name. I'd be happy to. It's Tony Moran. We've got Tony Moran signed up for our Friday night event at Rich's. And it should be, you know, a wonderful event. Rich's is going to, we're working with them. We're getting the details ironed out. We should have those done this week. But we do have the agreement put together with Rich's. And it should be a really neat event for Friday night. And then our main event Saturday night, our DJ is going to be Roland Belmaris. And that's going to be held at Warehouse Live. This year, as it was last year.
I see. And what does BCBC and Jungle support? Is it specifically certain types of organizations?
Sure. Well, we're a nonprofit, 501c3, and we're really more like a foundation in that we are a nonprofit that raises money for other nonprofits. Mm-hmm. This year, we've selected five beneficiaries for our Jungle event, and we are approaching this year. We are going to approach $1 million in our total giveaway in the history of our organization.
That's amazing. Can you let our listeners know the beneficiaries?
Absolutely. The beneficiaries that have been selected this year are AIDS Foundation Houston, Bering Omega, which I believe is actually their Stone Soup Kitchen, which is part of Bering Omega. I hope I'm right on that. I'm pretty sure I am. The Montrose Counseling Center, the Center for AIDS, which you are a part of, and I got some good news from you today, I think on Facebook. Do you want to talk about that at all?
What is that? What are you talking about?
Aren't you...
I'm the newly elected board chair, but I was talking more about Bryan City Boys Club.
Yeah. Okay.
That's
okay.
Another.
Yeah, great. But anyway, CFA.
We'll interview him later.
Sure, that sounds great.
I'll interview myself like I normally
well,
do.
Well, Brian's a nice guy, you know, and I'm just trying to make a little levity here, but he's a wonderful person. Brian is an emeritus member of the Bayou City Boys Club. And our final beneficiary this year is Legacy Community Health Services, which, of course, you know, provides a plethora of services to not only the gay community, but to the community at large for AIDS and HIV-related issues. But those are the five beneficiaries, AFH, Bering Omega, Montrose Counseling Center, CFA, and Legacy Community Health Services.
And the Easter is early this year, or is it?
It's actually about a week and a half early this year. It kind of falls. Some years it's 2 weeks later. Some years it's as much as 2.5 weeks early. It's about 2 weeks earlier this year. So, of course, the impetus on us is to get things going and to really start working hard about right now, right after
this
the Christmas holidays.
This is kind of what I call the fundraising season, where you start kind of gearing up for Easter, especially in Houston. And where both Bunnies and BCBC start, you know, asking the community to support the events. And tell us about that. Kind of what do you ask the community for, and what is your goal every year?
Well, our goal this year, we set our goal this year at $50,000. We're hoping to give away $10,000 to each one of our beneficiaries, which in some cases is exceeding the amount that they have requested. But we feel that we put together, with putting the whole weekend together, and we announced our DJs several months ago, so we are kind of ahead of the curve on announcing our DJs, that we should have a really good chance of making our goal this year of $50,000.
Even in this bad economy?
Yeah. Even in the bad economy.
Now, is there an event after Bunnies on Sunday night?
Well, Bunnies has their... I don't know if they're having an after event this year, but we are having an after-hours event after our main event Saturday night, which will actually run till about 8 o'clock in the morning if you have got the gas to go that long. And that's our after-hours party, which I think we're still working on the venue on that. We should have that set up. But we do already have the DJ set up for that, and that's Lydia Prim from Miami. So all of our DJs this year, we're having like Michael Tank for our opening party, Tony Moran for our Friday night event, Roland Belmaris for our main event on Saturday, and then Lydia Prim for our after hours. These are all nationally known DJs. These are you know, wonderful folks that have got wonderful reputations in the dance community. They make some great music, make for some great times.
And that's a huge national draw. But what can you say to people in Houston, our Houston listeners, that maybe haven't been to Jungle in a couple of years? What can they expect, and why should they maybe come back if they haven't been in a couple of years?
I'm glad you said that. One of the things that we, this year, our venue for the last 3 years, this will be our third year, actually, is it our third year or fourth year at Warehouse Live? I think our third year at Warehouse Live. And we have worked out some bugs that we had last year with our VIP area, in that we're going to go back to our old VIP room that we had the year before last, which is a little bit larger, and then we are also going to have, for our VIPs, we're going to have a silent auction area set up for them as well in the smaller area that we tried to utilize last year. So we're going back to our roots a little bit to make the party work a little bit better. Another thing is this year is both both of our Friday night and Saturday night events are going to be 18 and up this year, which we're hoping to get some more people and some younger people in to see what we're all about.
The next generation.
You got it.
We're getting kind of old.
Let me tell you, at my age, we're not going to be able to be called the Bayou City Boys Club much longer if we don't get some more younger people in here.
It's going to be the Bayou City Old Men's Club.
Right, because let me tell you.
It's harder to make till 8 in the morning, though. If you're not that, if you don't have, you're 20-something.
Yeah, if you're 20-something, you can do it. But if you're like me, which 20 was a while back, I don't like standing out in the rain with a truck, getting it loaded up and being the last person to go home. I don't have that anymore.
And, the younger people can dance all night, but there's also the VIP lounge for the...
Yes,
the slightly older... More a seasoned,
more discriminating potential guest that you may have.
Kind of been there, done that.
Yeah,
looking for the next.
The great thing about our venue is our main room, or the main room for the main event, and our VIP room is separated by a window. In other words, you can stay in the VIP room and actually watch what's going on out on the dance floor, watch the performers, watch the show, and everything that's going to be happening in the main room. And you can also go back into that room and kind of cool down, cool off, whatever, what have you. So the party, you can go as fast as you want to, or you can just take it easy and have a great time.
Now, where's this again?
It's going to be a Warehouse Live, which is on St. Emmanuel. I don't have the exact address right now.
813 St. Emmanuel.
813 St. Emmanuel. Thanks, Brian.
Brian, where is it?
There's the George R. Brown, and then it's just east of there. It's kind of the Warehouse District.
Right. And I know where that is.
Yeah, it's a wonderful venue, actually. It's well suited for what our event is, in that they've got a large dance floor area set up. They've got many bars set up in there, plenty of parking. We are going to have valet for our VIPs, which we will have have that for our Saturday night event, or anybody that can pay for it, and we will also have there's plenty of off street parking around there, and there will be security, of course.
So we talked about the event. Let's talk more about Bayou City Boys Club and the organization itself. Like, if we have people out there that may be interested, how can they become?
We don't really have a membership drive. We have an open membership all times during the year. The way the Bayou City Boys Club works is typically if you want to join our organization, you can either contact our organization through our email, which is available on our website, or you can contact...
Do you want to give out that email?
Sure. Well, I don't have the email set up right now. Right now, the website that we have operating, of course, most websites are in flux when you start getting close towards the events. JungleHouston.com is our main website, and there will be links on there to email us if you have questions or if you want to inquire about membership. But typically the way the Bayou City Boys Club works is you pledge us for a year. You come in, you come to one of our general meetings, you tell us a little bit about yourself, and one of the things that we always like to ask is what your sign is.
Oh, Billy. That's funny.
And are you on Facebook?
We are. We have a large presence on Facebook.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, if you type in the Bayou City Boys Club or Jungle Houston, we have about 3 Facebook sites.
Okay.
And the BCBC Facebook site is, I want to say it's over 1,000 members right now. Yeah. So our main event typically on Saturday night will attract right around 1,000 folks. We're hoping for 1,000, 1,100 this year. That's about the capacity of the venue, and it would be wonderful if we can fill that venue up. It makes it for a wonderful, wonderful time.
It gets kind of crowded.
Yeah.
So if people out there are interested, how long do they have to join?
Well, the way we work is you come to one of our general meetings, we get all of your information down, and at that point we have meetings once a month typically, and then as Bunny said when they were here earlier, as we start getting closer to the event, our meetings will occur more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do is you pledge us for a year, and that gives you a year to decide if you like us, and if we like you, at that point we vote, and you'd be very hard-pressed not to become a member after that period of time. But there's no obligations up front with anybody. You don't pay any dues for the first year that you're there. And if you, for some reason, you decide that's not what you want to do, there's no hard feelings at all. But we really, we're looking for people that are willing to work, because it's a lot of work to pull this organization together.
Well, like what kind of work? I mean, what can people expect?
Well, we do several events during the year. You have a question?
No.
Oh. Okay.
Directly
I should talk closer to the front of the mic. Yes. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Everybody's
trying to be subtle, but you know.
Well, it's radio. I'm sorry. But typically, what was your question again, Brian? I'm sorry.
What if someone is interested in BCBC, what sort of work and what sort of obligations can they expect?
We do several events during the year, and really most of our work is going to be work on the days of our events. If we have a few fundraisers during the year where we try to raise money, like our hurricane party that we have typically every October. We had it a little bit later last year due to Hurricane Ike, but this year we kind of got it back on schedule. Yeah, we had a real hurricane party year before last. It was anyway, but we have a few events. So typically, you work during that event. But leading up to Jungle, the main thing that our folks or that we require members to do is to look for is to try to find underwriters, and that's people who fund our party. Typically, our underwriters, which form the core of the funds that we need to that we need to throw the Jungle Party, typically we pay for our party about 2 weeks before the event. And without giving you any dollar figures on that, it's let me just tell you this: with those name type of DJs and the venues that we have and the quality of entertainment and the quality of experience that you will have by attending Jungle, it costs a lot of money to throw this event. And so really that's the main thing that we want our members to do, is to go out there and try to raise funds and to, you know, through social contacts and things like that, to raise funds to get this party put together so that we are able to donate 100% of our net ticket proceeds to our beneficiaries. And we have been able to do that for the majority of the life of our organization, with the exception of the last couple of years, and that's been a little bit due to the economic downturn. Right. But typically, we've been able to give 100% of our net proceeds of our ticket prices back to our beneficiaries. So our underwriters and the generous folks in the community are the ones that have paid for this party year after year after year. And we certainly hope that we can, you know, continue to count on their support this year.
And that's what we're hoping our listeners can provide. If you're joining us, we have been talking to Billy Underwood, the president of Bayou City Boys Club, and about the largest event of the year, Jungle Party. And what is the website and contact information, Billy?
Our website, and like I said, as it's set up right now, is junglehouston.com. And we also have a presence on Facebook as well. And we will have another website coming up here pretty quick. It'll be bcbc.info. And that website is currently under revision at this time.
All right, Billy, anything else you want to let our listeners know?
What I really want to encourage them to do is, if you haven't come to Jungle in a few years, we would invite you to come back. It's a wonderful experience. We've got a great venue. We have a wonderful lineup of DJs this year. We've really done our work. We've really taken the great thing about Facebook is you can get a lot of feedback from your attendees from past years. We've been able to look at that information and really hone our product down to a wonderful event. I think that if there's folks that have not been to Jungle in the past few years, give us another chance. Come back. I think you'll like the venue. I think you'll like the DJs that we've got lined up, and I think you will really like and enjoy the type of entertainment experience that we're going to offer you. And of course, it's always, always, always for a good cause. It's to continue to fight this horrible thing that we've been fighting for years, which is AIDS and HIV, and it's for wonderful beneficiaries of, like I said, we picked five this year, wonderful beneficiaries, and we hope to give away $50,000 to those beneficiaries this year.
Well, Billy, that's very well said, and please check them out online, on Facebook, and on Easter Sunday.
JungleHouston.com, that'll be up running, I think, in the next week or so. Did you hear that, Scott? I need you to get on that. That's for Scott Thomason, who's he's probably listening right now. If he's not, I hope he is, or somebody will call him and tell him.
There you go. Well, Billy Underwood, thank you for coming on the show.
Well, Brian, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed that, and it's been wonderful to come back and talk to you again this year.
All right. Well, thank you. And this is Queer Voices.
Brought to you by the Rainbow Amateur Radio Association, serving LGBT ham radio operators all over the world. Weekly radio net meetings are conducted over various frequencies and over the Internet. For more information about this fun hobby, please visit www.rara.org or call 954-502-6969. Houston, Texas has joined Paris and Berlin as world-class cities boasting openly gay or lesbian mayors. Building on a long career of public service, Anise Parker's win in a runoff election in December made headline news from coast to coast in the U.S. and internationally. This Way Out correspondent Jack Belinsky chronicles Parker's activism and political career and chats with her about how she'll lead her city into the second decade of the 21st century.
When Anise Parker was elected in December of last year, Houston became the largest U.S. city with an openly gay mayor. Houston, with 2.3 million residents, is the fourth largest city in the United States. Anise Parker had won six previous citywide elections, starting in 1997. She served three terms as the city council member in an at-large position. Then she served three terms as Houston's controller, the city's second highest elected official. Parker gained the reputation as a fiscal conservative. Parker stressed fiscal responsibility along with plans to protect neighborhoods with more police officers. Parker was always open about who she is, but always stuck to the issues facing the city of Houston. She ran a very grassroots campaign, but it was considered underfunded for the general election in November. Parker came in first with 30% against three other major candidates for the November general election. This put her in a runoff with Gene Locke, the former city attorney. Both candidates are Democrats and had good credentials in the LGBT community. As city attorney, Locke had written Houston's anti-discrimination ordinance. Locke then approached the city conservative leaders for endorsements. Parker began her political career as a leader in what is now known as the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. But her sexual orientation did not become an issue in the mayor's race until two groups sent mailers in the final weeks of the runoff. Doesn't make her qualified to be mayor. This backfired as news outlets spent more time criticizing the senders than discussing Anise's sexual orientation. The second attack came from Dr. Stephen Hotze, who heads the group called the Straight Slate. This anti-gay campaigner had been active in Houston's politics since the 1980s and is even better known around the city for being a racist. His group is motivated by the concerns about a gay takeover of City Hall, given that two other candidates in the five remaining city council races were also openly gay. Locke never officially embraced the Hotze endorsement, but the Houston Chronicle reported that Hotze's mailer was paid in part by donations from the Locke Campaign Finance Committee members. For the December 12th runoff, Parker received the sole endorsement of the Houston Chronicle, the city's major newspaper. The weekend before the runoff, volunteers from Dallas, San Antonio, El Paso, and other Texas cities called more than 10,000 people to the Get Out the Vote campaign. The Washington, D.C.-based Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund endorsed the campaign and made it a high priority by sending volunteers to work in Houston. The December 12th runoff election day was rainy and cold. Turnout was light. A rare snow affected early voting. Only 16% of the eligible voters came to the polls. Anise Parker won with 53% of the votes. Chuck Wolf, president of the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund, which endorsed Parker, said the victory holds tremendous significance to the gay community. This is a watershed moment in American politics. Anise was elected by fair-minded people from across the city because of her experience and competence, according to Wolf. We talked to Anise just before she officially became mayor on January 2nd. Anise, tell us about your early involvement in the GLBT community.
It was trying to find a social group that I fit into. And since I was really, I was out when I came to Rice, and I outed myself during freshman orientation to my dorm mates, and it didn't go over particularly well, and then it was too late to undo it. So it was just a matter of making kind of the best of it. And I was lucky that in my sophomore year at Rice, I met a group of older lesbians who were involved in the beginning GLBT political movement. This would have been 75, 76. The demographics of Houston have changed tremendously. And we're a much younger city. Actually, we're a younger Hispanic city. But the international population has just skyrocketed.
Well, then you became president of the caucus.
I was involved in a number of organizations. I was the statewide co-chair of Lesbian Gay Democrats of Texas, the Lesbian Gay Rights Lobby of Texas as well. I was, yes, president of the Gay Political Caucus, treasurer of several GLBT organizations, Montrose Activity Center, which we served on.
Sort of the birthing
together,
of pride, in a sense.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And president of the Women's Softball League. So I worked my way through all the GLBT organizations.
And during that time, did you see that as a struggle sometimes for this community? Or in a sense, when you look back at the community, it seemed like we were a lot more together than we are today, because in some senses, maybe the community isn't as much needed, but also the fact that we seem like we were smaller.
Well, but that's those of us who were out and engaged were a very small minority, and we perhaps were more cohesive because we had something in common. We were out, we were committed to the struggle, but Jack, you're looking back fondly on a time when there were some huge fights.
We'll return to Jack Valinsky's conversation with Anise Parker, the new openly lesbian mayor of Houston, Texas, after this message about you.
Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy that way. Hey, sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy that way.
Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle. You hear my voice during the monthly audiophile music feature on This Way Out. But I'm here now to ask for your support of this one-of-a-kind radio show. We know times are tough these days. We have one part-time paid staff person at This Way Out who does all the production and administrative work to bring you our half-hour international radio show every week. The rest of us are unpaid volunteers. Everyone here does it for love, certainly not for financial gain. You can't put a monetary value on this program, whether it's in dollars, euros, or yen. We think This Way Out offers a priceless, sometimes even life-saving voice heard around the world, celebrating the rich diversity of LGBT experience. Please log on to our website to see how you could help keep us going. Whatever you can offer will be put to good use and truly appreciated. Read all about it at www.thiswayout.org. That's www.thiswayout.org. And thank you.
Sing if you're happy.
I'm Jack Valinsky, speaking with Anise Parker, the first out person to be elected mayor of a major American city. So why did you decide to run for public office?
For about 10 years after I graduated from college, I was arguably the most visible lesbian activist in Houston. There was Pokey Anderson, Sue Lovell, and I, and that stayed engaged over that decade. And as I said, I kind of worked my way through and stayed active in a number of organizations. And I wanted to do something else. And so the next 10 years, I was really engaged in civic organizations, Near Town Association, my own local civic club.
Anise, on city council, what would you say were your accomplishments?
I threw myself into quality of life issues, and there's a whole range of ordinances that I have my fingerprints on and I take credit for. And when I say they're my ordinances, it means that I was intimately involved in drafting them. I'm from the Pooper Scooper Ordinance for the City of Houston, pick up after your pet, to changes to the Tree and Shrub Ordinance, the Sound Ordinance, changes to the Smoking Ordinance, a lot of development codes, you know, how we use or don't use pesticides in city parks, changed the ordinance so we could go to a nighttime pride parade. We had to tweak the ordinance, prohibiting having exotic or dangerous animals in the city of Houston, helped create the first dog park, and helped do the ordinances to create the first skateboard park in the city of Houston. Very active in creating the Percent for Art program. So we spend city dollars on public art. So a lot of quality of life issues. We did pass the city non-discrimination ordinance when I was a council member and attempted to provide domestic partner benefits, but unfortunately there was a referendum that prohibited that.
What are some of the things that you would like to accomplish in the next, hopefully, 6 years?
I just need to get through the first 6 months in office. That's the biggest challenge, because that will be the end of this fiscal year and going into my first full budget cycle. We still have to cut spending. Mayor White is doing his best to leave us with the books in the black, but the economy continues to drift down. And there's some things that he expected to close by the end of the year that may not, so I'm going to have to cut spending. We also have some real issues to deal with in the police department. I'm going to be looking for a new chief. The current chief will be gone before I take office, so that's very, very high on my agenda. I'm putting together transition teams in a number of subject areas to help advise me on going forward. But I do have an advantage in that I've been in the city system. I understand how it works. I have a familiarity with most of the department directors that I'll be dealing with. So I have some advantages. It's just, that Bill Clinton's campaign, is the economy stupid? Mm-hmm. It's still the economy.
Well, it's really interesting that you've been in office, elected citywide now 7 times, but you were elected 6 times, and then all of a sudden, sort of the lid fell out that you're a gay woman.
That's because it's the mayoral campaign and the level of scrutiny is much higher. The mayor is the public face of a city. And in many ways, there are layers of meaning to who the mayor is that they really didn't enter in as a council member when you're one of many, or controller when it's strictly about the finances. And I was absolutely the strongest candidate in the controller's race. But, Jack, you know, when I ran in 91 and 95, every time I saw my name, it had the word gay or lesbian next to it. In 97, I actually, on every printed piece of material I did in the campaign, it said, past president, Houston Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. It was part of my resume. I wanted people to know that and see it for two reasons. One, I didn't have to talk about it. And I didn't ever have to say, well, I'm not trying to sneak up on you. It's here. And it makes it hard for other people to raise the issue, because then it becomes it's in her material. But it was also important to me because I have always considered myself an activist, that we need to bring our full selves to what we do. And I couldn't have gone back in the closet to run if I'd wanted to, but it seemed to me at the time very important that I represent for the community. I am not a spokesperson for the GLBT community. I am a soon-to-be mayor of the city of Houston and a proud member of the GLBT community, but not a spokesperson, because I expect the organizations that are out there to continue and to bring the issues forward so that I can act on behalf of all the citizens of Houston.
Do you expect any protest outside?
I do. Apparently Fred Phelps is coming down. Yes, I not only Jay Leno and The Daily Show, but Fred Phelps. I hit the trifecta here.
Fabulous. Well, thank you.
There may be some homegrown protesters, but the interesting thing is we had to import protesters from Kansas, that there are apparently not enough of them here.
I have been speaking with the new out lesbian mayor of Houston, Texas, Anise Parker. Anise officially took office on Saturday, January 2nd. From Queer Voices at Pacifica's KPFT in Houston, I'm Jack Falinski for This Way Out.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Michelle Pleasant, Taryn James, Edmund White, J.D. Doyle, and Jack Falinski contributed program material, the New York Philharmonic Orchestra, Brian Best, and the Tom Robinson Band performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is only made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, listen to our podcasts, read this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. A happier new year to us all, and thanks for listening on Q Nation FM, online out of Cleveland, Ohio, to TLC, Yumba, New South Wales, KHEN, Salida, Colorado, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. That's all. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
In this short time we have before the show is over, I want to give thanks to the entire crew here at Queer Voices that make this show possible every week as we start the new year and do more programming. Joan, who contributes from Iowa, and David Elliott, who contributes from Washington, but also the and JD, who contributes from the
Woodlands.
Jennifer and Brian and Glenn and Summer are all very, very important to this show, and I really appreciate all the work that they do to put the show together every week.
Well, we appreciate you too, Jack.
And we have to say kudos to Jack for doing the This Way Out feed this week.
Yeah, absolutely. That congratulations.
Very, very impressive.
You deserve it.
Well, it helps having a mayor to interview.
Well, yeah, but somebody had to interview her.
We want to thank our guest tonight, which is Tim Brookover, representing the Community Center.
Who is the guy from Dallas Voice?
John Wright, Dallas Voice, who gave us sort of a year-end what's happening in Texas.
And what about Bunnies on the Bayou?
We had the president, Vince Flickinger, and Jack Berger, or Jack Berger.
And yep. Jungle.
In Jungle, we had Bay City Boys Club president, Billy Underwood.
Ah. Well, thank you. This is Queer Voices.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston, with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, and Jack Valensky, with contributing editors Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. The music heard on this program is provided by J.D. Doyle, who also contributes to the audio file segment of This Way Out and who produces Queer Music Heritage, which is an hour-long feature of Queer Voices the fourth Monday of every month. For more information, visit JD's website at queermusicheritage.com. And listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
There are places you go to get the quick news.
You know the kind. Those three-line summaries of world issues and events.
The celebrity gossip. The intellectual junk food.
And then there's public radio.
You tune to KPFT each day because you need more than just the summary.
You need to hear the whole discussion to make informed decisions.
You need to understand the background, to understand the cultures, ideas, and history that touches our lives.
You want music from more than five corporations.
You need a choice. And that's why you tune to community radio, because you have to know more.
People like you support KPFT to keep us on the air.
So visit kpft.org today to become a member of this station.
This is listener-sponsored,
commercial-free,
Pacifica Radio,
KPFT, Houston.
Picture yourself driving home listening to a great story or a song or a discussion.
Suddenly, you find yourself parked, but rather than turn the radio off, you stay in your car to hear what you're listening to the end.
That's called a driveway moment.
A driveway moment?
Yes, it's that moment that you just can't get out of the car because what you're hearing is just that good.
Then, hey, what better place to support KPFT?
KPFT features music, news, and talk that is so compelling, people will do anything to hear the end of it. If you're in your car right now and have your cell phone with you, as soon as you pull in, give a call to our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314.
Give me that number again.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.